Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. In this hour adventure, later on we hear Quiet Please from 1948, but right now it's Escape. With a story from Rudyard Kipling, first published in 1888, we hear the second adaptation of The Man Who Would Be King on the Escape series, heard on August 1st, 1948 on CBS.
Fed up with the everyday grind? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape! Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are making your painful way over the great India desert, alone and dying of thirst, while behind you, pursuing you, are the fanatical Kafirs, who once bowed to you as king, and now call for your life.
Tonight, we escape to India and two soldiers of fortune who pushed fate too far, as Rudyard Kipling told it in his famous story, The Man Who Would Be King. One Saturday night, it was my unpleasant duty to put the paper to bed alone. It was a pitchy black night. As stifling as a night can be in India in June. It was very still, save for the ticking of the clock above my desk, which seemed to shatter the black heat of the night as the hands crept toward 3 a.m. And then from the passage outside my door, I heard voices. Well, who's there?
Only us.
And who are you?
Oh, so you don't remember us, eh?
No, I can't say that.
How about the Jodhpur border, then?
Jodhpur border.
Yeah, and having the authorities turn us back for impersonating newspaper men.
Newspaper
men? And then there was the train.
Yeah, off of which you had us thrown, if I remember correct.
Oh, wait. That flaming red hair. That bald head. Oh, Daniel Dravot and Peachy Carnahan.
The same.
Well, what do you two want this time? If it's money, I haven't got it. And if it's a fight, it's too beastly hot.
You can rest yourself easy, sir, because we have come asking for naught except some information.
We've been all over this country, and we've concluded that India isn't big enough for such as Daniel and me.
So, we are going away to be kings.
Kings in our own divine right.
What?
Aye, we shall be kings.
Yeah, we've signed a solemn contract, each to help the other. And neither of us to look at liquor or women until we have become king.
I've never heard of such a fantastic idea. Now, well, what do you want of me?
Nought but a look at such maps of Kafiristan as you might have about.
Maps of Kafiristan?
That's where we decided to go.
Well, don't you realize that not one single Englishman has ever gone into the Kafiristan Mountains and lived at Mount Again? You're a good deal more likely to become dead men than kings.
Yeah, I will, sure.
Anyway, I don't believe you have the slightest intention of traveling a mile outside of Delhi.
Then you should come down to the Sarai Marketplace in the morning, down where the caravans leave for the north.
Now, look. Look, you two. I'm a newsman, not a nomad. Now, why should I come down to that filthy pest hole?
I'm not so sure that you're either.
What do you mean?
You say you're a newsman, but here's the chance to see the start of the greatest story of all time. And you'd pass it up.
Because you're too blasted lazy to get up that early in the morning. Come along, Dravot, my lad.
Yeah, but if you should have a change of heart, come to the Sarai in the morning and see whether we'd be liars or not.
And so they left, those two lovable scoundrels. And I sat alone in my office, thinking. The kings of Kafiristan. Kings indeed. But then, perhaps, just perhaps, they might pull it off. And it would be something to cable home. And so it was that the next morning I was making my way through the dirty, milling crowds of the Sarai Marketplace.
Upon all pigs, dogs, and perjurers.
You should not laugh at him, Sahib. The witless are under the protection.
Quite so. And who is the fellow, anyway?
A mad priest, Sahib, who has arrived only this morning from Ajmer.
I see.
You, Sahib, come look at my camels.
loaded with toys to please the eye of an army.
Here, now. Go about your business. I haven't any use for toys.
These are wondrous toys indeed, Sahib. Fit for a king of Kafiristan.
What? My good lord. Daniel Dravot.
Quiet. Come along. I have two camels just beyond the wall here. The blessings of Pir Khan on the gracious Sahib consents to look at the poor toys of a priest from Ajmer. Over this way.
Where's Conahan?
Here we are. Permit me to present my servant, Azamir Khan.
At your service, Governor.
Well, I'll
How do you
be...
like our disguises? Do they pass?
If they fool this crowd in the Serai, they're probably good enough to get you across the border. And good enough to get you killed.
Yeah, getting killed is no part of the contract Peachy and me drawed up. Although, perhaps killing fits in with our plans in a different sense. Feel around underneath the toys there in the camel bag.
What? My good lord, the rifles.
20 brand new Lee Enfields. With ammunition to match.
Yeah, and 20 good reasons to make your death certain. Any Pathan of the hill tribes would kill his own mother to get a rifle.
Now, who would harm? A poor mad priest, Sahib. Allah protects me.
Mad is right.
And so was Lord Clive, and Rhodes, and Bonaparte. Drive out the camels, Peachy. We have a long way to go before we become kings.
Hoy!
As I stood and listened to the camel bells fade away in the distance, I wondered if it might not be a glorious thing to go to Kafiristan and be a king. Three years pass in India, much as they pass in any other land. It grows hot, then the rains come, and then the heat again. The paper duly records the death of a sultan in Rajputana, and the trees in the courtyard grow a few feet taller. And finally, time in its circle turned up another night, much like the one 3 years before. Once again, I sat alone in the office, listening to the clock, and waiting for some unimportant item to come over the wire from Europe. It was long after midnight when my office door slowly opened. Well, I say, you might knock first, you know.
Knock. Knock.
Good Lord, man. What's wrong?
You don't know who I am, do you?
No. No, I haven't the faintest idea. Have it here. You'd better sit down, old fellow. You're in a bad way.
Yes, sir. Thank you. It's a whole year I've been walking. Right here in this very office we settled it. You sitting right there and giving us the maps. Hey, and you've been sitting there ever since? 3 years.
No. Oh, no. Man couldn't change that much in 3 years. You're not Peachy Conahan.
Yes. I was the king of Kafiristan. Me and Daniel Dravot. Real crown kings we was. Just as true as gospel.
And what in the name of heaven have they done to you, Peachy?
Peachy? I knew Peachy Conahan once. He's a king. He was a real golden crown on his head. So help me, he does. He's dead now.
No. You're Peachy Conahan. You are. Now you must pull yourself together.
Yes. Pull myself. You've got to keep looking into my eyes. Then maybe everything won't go to pieces.
All right. All right. Now, tell me what happened, Peachy.
We left the caravan at Jagdala, and we struck off into the hills alone.
Yes. Go on.
Weeks it was we traveled, Daniel and me. First, there wasn't no roads, and after a while, no food. But there was always the drums. Sometimes they was close, sometimes farther off. Most of the time we could hear them somewhere.
Move along there. Here now. It's no place to be stopping. A
up with you?
Oh, I'm fearing it's no use, Daniel.
What's got into him?
Well, the poor beasts are done in and starved, same as ourselves. Don't go no further.
Then we'll go on without him. I've not come this far to die on the side of a mountain.
Wait. Look, Daniel. Over the edge of them rocks.
Oh, men they are.
Yes, there's a score or more of them. And one goes ahead of the rest.
In naught but bows and arrows. Break out a pair of the rifles, PJ.
Right you are, Daniel.
It's now that we start to become kings.
Here you are. And some cartridges, too.
Easy now, Peachy. I'll drop the straggler at the rear first. Then we'll lay a few at their feet. No harm to the one in front. We may need him. Now.
Got him, Basil.
Oh, lay on, Peachy.
Hold it, Daniel. Look at him.
Ah, flat on the blooming faces.
It's their leader. He's coming out alone.
Well and good. We'll go part way to meet him, Peachy. But keep your rifle by.
Look at him, Daniel. He's as fair as us, with yellow hair.
So he is. Part of the lost tribes, these people are.
Stopped.
I await your command, O ye who speak with the voice of thunder.
By the Lord, Airy Peachy, we're in luck. It's the old Afghan tongue he speaks.
Speak up. Who are you and whence do you come?
I am high priest and the chief of the village of Bashkai. A journey of only a few heartbeats.
This Bashkai. How many people?
They are numbered in the thousands.
There are more villages in the hills.
More than a man has fingers and toes.
You hear that, Peachy? Here's our kingdom, made to order.
And you? You're going to take us to Bashkai. Do you understand?
I understand the voice of thunder that you speak.
Ooh, he's a smooth one, Peachy. He knows a thing or two.
What's your name?
Mazur Khan Jagdalur.
That's too long.
Hey, we'll call him Peachy.
He has the look about him of an old soldiering friend of ours. Billy Fish.
So he does.
Hey, we bestow a name on you. From now on, you'll be Billy Fish. And put this on your drums. Tell them two kings have come out of the mountaintops. Two kings that speak in words of thunder, so the earth trembles. Tell them two kings have come to Kafiristan.
That you, Peachy?
Daniel, why are you sitting out here in the dark?
I've been thinking. Man has to stop and think sometimes.
Anything special, Daniel?
Look at him, Peachy. Look at that blinking campfires that are gleaming in the dark. Like the jewels in the crown.
Yes, Daniel. You've done a fine job for sure. All 23 villages you joined together as one.
It is the army you trained to be thanked for it. 2,000 men with a fair knowledge of bearing arms.
Some of them's a bit green at it yet.
Yeah, they're ours now. Every man, jack, woman, and child. We own them, body and soul.
Yes. We're kings now, Daniel. Not proper kings yet, but we will be.
Yeah, sooner than you think, PG.
How's that?
Now, Billy Fish told me something today that fair amazed me. These people know the craft.
You mean they're Freemasons? Daniel, it's impossible.
So help me, it's gospel true. He give the grip and everything. It's old, the craft is. Older than the memory of man. And up here in the hills, they've been preserving it all these years. Why, some of the high priests know up through the fellow craft, but they don't know the third degree. You see it, Peachy? They don't know the third degree. But we do.
And Daniel, what is it you're fixing to do?
Do? We're going to be proper kings. We got them going and coming now. I'm going to turn the whole country into one grand lodge, raise some of the priests to the third degree. And for me, I'll be the grand master of Kafiristan.
You ain't got the right to. We've never been officers in no lodge.
Right. What's a king got to do with asking for a right?
I'm against it, Daniel. It's no good to go fooling around with the craft.
You talk like an old woman. The thing will work. I know it will. We'll make it a blooming ceremony. Regular aprons with the symbols and the marks. All for us, Peachy. The king's a Kafiristan.
Everything is prepared, Master.
And the priests and the people wait.
Well, they haven't much longer, Billy. Yeah, now, Peachy, how do you like my apron?
It's a wondrous sight for fair, Daniel.
Made of white almond skin it is. And the master's mark with emerald studded.
The mark? You know the meaning of the mark.
That I do.
It's got into you, Billy.
It's a thing that's passing strange, Master.
Yeah, strange and rubbish. Come along now. Ready, Peachy?
Right with you, Daniel.
Then out we go. Onto the temple steps. We'll give them what for. Knock the blinking eyes out. That's what we'll do. Look at them, Peachy. Right down on their blooming knees and yelling their fool heads off.
Of course, a good thing to be a king, Daniel.
The mark. Behold the mark.
Yeah, now. What's wrong with the priest, Billy?
It looks like trouble, Daniel.
No. Stand where you are, Master. They recognize the mark.
That great stone on the floor. Why did they turn it over?
Wait.
It's the same.
He bears the mark.
The promise.
Speak up, Billy Fish. What's the meaning of it?
See for yourself. Look.
Daniel. Carved on the back of the stone.
It is the master's mark, all right.
And the same as the sign you wear. Only a few of the priests have known of the hidden mark on the stone.
What does it mean?
The many who have doubted you are a god doubt no longer.
And you, Billy, what do you think?
I, Master, I think that now it is the time for these.
Ooh, Daniel! Golden crowns.
Aye, how they glitter. Fit for the brow of a king.
It's what we came for.
Here now, put them on. We'll crown ourselves in our own right. Ah, listen to them. You know something, Peachy? We come here to be kings, and that we are, all right. But blamed if we ain't a couple of blooming gods to boot. With a million people bowing on their knees afore us.
Well enough, Peachy. So it was gods you became, as well as kings. But then what happened? What became of Daniel Dravot?
Dravot? I knew Daniel Dravot once. He's a king now, Daniel is. Where's the golden crown? Carnarion was with him.
Peachy. Peachy, try to pull yourself together now.
Yes. I'll try.
Good. Good. Now you became kings, you and Daniel. Kings of all Kafiristan.
He was a fine figure, Daniel was. With his red head wearing that golden crown. Kept himself aloof from the people, so to speak. When he walked out in front of the temple, I feared I crawled on their stomachs to worship him.
Yes, but what happened, man?
What happened? Well, I figure mostly it was winter coming on. The winds were starting up and clouds was blowing down from the north. Oh, it could blow beastly cold, that winter wind.
Who's out there? That you, Billy? Confound it anyway. Here now, watch this.
I have brought you food, Master. Dew of the wild sheep with curry and rice.
Oh, up off your knees, girl. Bring it inside.
Thank you, Master.
Place it there. You're a well-favored wench.
I do not understand.
Why are you crawling on your knees?
Fitting way to approach the god of Kafiristan.
What's your name, girl?
Marum of Denjab.
Marum, huh? You married?
It has not yet been my happy fortune, Master.
Pray to me?
You are a god.
How do I seem to you? You find me pleasing, or what?
Your face is more wondrous than the noonday sun. And your look, the look of eagles.
very well. You may leave now.
Thank you, Master.
Marum, huh? Peachy. Peachy.
Oh, was you calling me, Daniel? Oh, the food's here, eh? Ah, good.
Mark that wind outside. You know, winter's about due to strike and fill the passes with snow. There'll be little moving about before spring.
Yeah, you're right.
Peachy, I decided to take a wife.
But you can't do it, Daniel. We made a contract.
That was till we was kings. Well, kings we've been these many months now.
Ah, it's no good. I'll tell you now, I'm against it.
Against it? You was against using the craft, too, but look what it done for us.
This is different. Billy Fish will tell you no, the same as I do.
Billy Fish? Who's the king here, him or me? My mind's made up. 3 days from now, I shall have me a wife. And you can put it on the drums and tell every blighter out there in the hills. The kingdom of Kafiristan is gonna have a queen. What's keeping her, Peachy? They should have brought her in half an hour ago.
I don't know, Daniel.
How about you, Billy Fish? You put him up to stall an oath, deliberate-like.
Certain preparations must be made, Master.
She's across the court with some of the priests. Maybe they're trying to buck her up a bit, Daniel. She thinks she's going to die, you know.
Die indeed. Why, I
Master, know. It is against the laws of heaven for a woman to marry a god.
I'm not a god, I'm a man. You know that by now, Billy.
No. And I should not want to think so, Master. But either way, this can mean only trouble. I beg you to reconsider.
And I beg you to keep your mouth shut, Billy. I'm through waiting. I'm going over there to talk to the
police. Master, please.
Oh, we've got to go with him, Billy. I think it's going to mean trouble, but come on. How many men can you depend on?
No more than 20 with rifles. Most of my men are in Boshkai.
Then what shall we do?
We shall have to make a run for it, I fear. We might be safe in Boshkai.
Bungling fools. Bring out the girl. Well, now, that's better. Here, girl. This is no way for a bride to behave. Oh, smile now. And give us a kiss.
Oh! The wench has bitten me.
Blood, Master. Don't let them see the blood.
Look! See the blood! He's not a god or a devil, but only a man!
Here, rot! What is this rot?
Master, it is too late.
Back, Daniel, they're coming with knives.
They can't do this. I am the king.
You must run for it, Master.
Come on, Daniel, come on.
Confounded heathens. I'll come back. I'll come back and beat the blasted engine. That's what I'll do.
Yes, Daniel. Yeah, we'll be back, all right.
How much further, Billy?
Only a short way beyond this ridge, Master.
Well, so far, so good. At least them blooming drums is stopped.
Well, we're at the top, Daniel.
Yeah. And a right good climb it's been.
Wait. Look. Seems the drums have come before us, Master.
Cut off. No less than 1,000 of them. Standing there quiet like, with them wicked long knives in their hands.
There'll be no getting past them, Daniel.
No. We're done for. Go back, Billy Fish. Take your man away with you. Go with him, Peachy. It's me they want. I did it. Me, the king.
No, Dan. I'm sticking with you. Billy Fish, you clear out.
I am your friend. I stay with you.
You're a good man, Billy.
They're coming now, Daniel.
Peachy.
Forget it, Daniel. I forgive you. Freely, fully.
Then let them come. There be one thing they can't change, Peachy. We've been kings. Kings in our own right.
kings of all Kabiristan.
Sliced open poor Billy Fish like a blooming earring, and he did. There in the snow and the rocks.
Oh, good Lord, man. But you, Peachy, you got away from them.
Got away from them, did I? Oh, no. They stung me out on a tree. They drove nails right through me hands, did you? See? Look, see? But I fooled them all right. Because the morning come and I wasn't dead. And then I made him think I'd lost my senses. And they was afraid to harm me because I was protected by Allah. They cut me down then, and after a while they let me go.
You poor devil. What of Draven? What happened to Daniel?
Daniel? Daniel's a king? He wears a golden crown.
No, no, now, what happened to him?
He's never left me. All them long months, walking on the road back, he kept me safe. The mountains, they danced at night, but Daniel held up his hand, and Peachy came along bent double. I never let go of Daniel's hand. Hey, he's with me now, here in this bundle. You knew old Daniel, sir, even if it was a monarch once. Look at him now.
Oh.
Well, now you've seen that we was really kings, I'll be on my way. You'll pardon me, sir?
I let him go. There was little else to do. He was only hours away from his death. I sat there and stared at the bundle he had left lying on my desk. Stared as the pale shafts of dawn struck fire in the red beard. Stared at the golden crown sitting too large and heavy upon the wrinkled, mummified head of Daniel Rabbit. The man who would be king.
Escape is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald.
Escape on Tuned to Yesterday from August 1st, 1948 on CBS. That would be the second time the story The Man Who Would Be King was adapted on that show. The first would be on July 7, 1947, the official first broadcast of Escape, setting the tone for what would be a pioneering and revered anthology series. It's an hour of adventure. On Tuned to Yesterday, I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now the Willis Cooper story, Vaheen Tahiti, on Quiet Please, which is a retelling of The Mutiny on the Bounty. This is from July 5, 1948, on the Mutual Broadcasting System. Ernest Chappell stars.
Quiet Please. Quiet, please.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please for tonight is called Vaheen Tahiti.
Her name used to be the Bethia, but when His Majesty's Navy commissioned her, they changed her name, of course.
I remember her very, very well. I remember her as we weighed anchor off St. Helens that wintry afternoon 2 days before Christmas and stood down the channel. I remember her in the howling gales north of the Horn when the wind and the icy rain fair threatened to rip the sails off her. I remember her in the flat calms of the Southern Ocean, too, with the sun starting to tar from her deck seams and 45 men, officers, and able seamen, and cooks, and gardener, and all, panting for breath between the two tropics. And I remember her burning, a broken and looted wreck on the beach far below us 120 west longitude and latitude 25 south. And I hark back to the dismal December day when the voyage began. If I could have known what lay ahead, I'd have jumped overboard, I would, in that tempestuous sea, and I'd have gone back somehow to our lighterman's life on the River Thames. Never seen Tahiti or Tupuai. Or maybe I wouldn't have. Maybe I'd have stopped aboard anyway, as I did. I'd be here just as I am now, the last man. Ara Haiti told me about it, of course. Else how would I know why we came to Tahiti and father? Ara Haiti led his wife to me all these long years on this lonely place. It was the women, of course. They'd taken more than a fancy to the English sailors who came to the lovely island with Captain Cook. And they prayed for the white men to come back. They shouldn't have done it. But they prayed to Vahine Tahiti. Vahine Tahiti, the mother goddess, the secret protectress of the women of Tahiti. The goddess who went away from Tahiti and... Well, I'll tell you about that. Vahine Tahiti, woman of Tahiti, that's her name. She has no other name. Then, since she went away, they don't remember her anymore. They've forgotten Vahine Tahiti. And they've forgotten the lovely women who came with us. Maimiti, Tarua, and Parahaiti, that was my wife. And, of course, they've forgotten us. Parahaiti told me how the women met and prayed and sang at the hidden marae under the hillside, the temple of volcanic rock the men didn't know about. She told me how they sang in the leafy shadows there and called upon Vahine Tahiti to vouchsafe an answer to their prayers. She told me how Vahine Tahiti did appear and how she did speak to her mortal sisters.
Comfort yourselves, sisters. For the men come in the canoe with the white wings. Theirs is a journey of hardship and suffering, and death is with them. You have prayed me to bring them, I have promised. They will come. Even at this moment, the great canoe spreads its wings and defies the storm as its master looks across the world of the waters to Tahiti.
And sure it was. For I reckoned back the day Vahine Tahiti spoke to the women. And it was the 23rd of December, 1787, 2 days before Christmas. And moreover, she spoke of the other great war canoes that lay at anchor and how they made solemn sounds with their great guns. And I remembered how the other ships did salute us with cannons as the little 90-foot transport stood down the brawling channel away from them. Para Haiti told me how the goddess spoke of the tyranny of the captain to his men. And I remembered, too, what I'd heard with my own two ears, the captain bellowing to Samuel.
I'll see here, Mr. Samuel.
The issue of the provisions.
I have no complaints from you about the qualities of provisions I've laid in. And I have no complaints, furthermore, from any man of the crew, do you hear? For if I do, I'll have the man thrust up in stanza, do you hear, Mr. Samuel? And we'll see the color of his blood under the cap. And that applies to you, too, sir. So give me none of your fool's arguments. Salt horse and weevily biscuit for sailorman's lot, and they'll like it. And so will you, Mr. Samuel. You hear me, sir?
I remember that all too well. All too well. Then for our Christmas dinner, salt horse and weevily biscuit, and what the worms had left of the cheese. Nor did the officers fare much better, except for the captain, who ate alone. I had it from Hall, the cook, that he ate plum pudding and drank brandy with his joint of fair, fresh roast beef. Fresh beef, do you hear? Well, it was many a year ago, and there's never been a roast of beef for me in all that time, for which my mouth watering now, I say, alas. And in Tahiti, the sun shone brightly all the day, and many a man wondered what secret the women had amongst them and why they burst into song and laughter 100 times a day. This, of course, we could not know. since only the captain and the master and the master's mate had ever seen the Isle of Tahiti before. No, it was a wondrous long voyage we had in this doughty little cockle shell, not much bigger than a man-o-war's longboat. I mind speaking of it one night to McCoy, the Scotsman from Kirkintilloch, as we stood anchor watch in False Bay off the Cape of Good Hope. I said, McCoy, I've got a good mind to jump ship.
Look, I'd do it myself, Smith. Again, there was a chance of getting ashore without being gobbled up by the sharks.
And I believe if we passed the word, there'd be more than us to try the beach.
I thought I would boggle at nothing at all in the way of food, man. I've had nothing to eat since the morning, except a bite of biscuit and a sup of greenish water.
You're starving us.
Aye, starving every man jack aboard. The officers, even.
McCoy, step up here by the ditch.
Eh? What's that fruit?
Don't talk so loud.
Oh, he's asleep.
Well, the master's on the quarterdeck, so speak easy.
Honey, you're the one that wanted to speak.
And so I will. Eh, Mac? Have you heard the talk?
Yeah. I've heard nothing but talk as long as I've been aboard this hooker.
You have?
Aye.
What kind of talk?
Oh, did you ever a British seaman go on a voyage and we out grumbling? We had come down 3 times a day.
Yeah, this is past the mere grumbling stage. So I hear.
Oh, do you know?
Have you heard aught?
Aye. I have.
And?
I don't like it, Smith.
Well, do you like being starved in and beaten? Being at the mercy of that brute of a man aft?
The captain, you mean? Harky, Smith. I've served time under more than a few captains of His Majesty's Navy. I thought I'd met some rare, hard men. But this one, oh, this one's a devil straight from hell. And one day...
Well, one day?
One day, mayhap someone will send him back to the place when he came. Hark.
What did you hear?
I thought I heard someone laughing.
There's nobody on deck. Got Mr. Fryer back in the quarterdeck.
No, Smith, it wasn't Fryer.
Oh, well, then who?
Smith. I could have sworn it was a woman laughing. Out there in the black darkness beyond.
And on the island of Tahiti at that very moment, for it was 5 months almost to the day after we'd set sail from the Isle of Wight, the women of Tahiti gathered at the hidden marae, listening as Vahine Tahiti laughed and set the echoes laughing in the darkness of the forest glade.
Comfort yourselves, my pretty ones, my anxious ones. You have asked, and Vahine Tahiti grants your prayers. They come, but it's a far journey and a long one. Vahine Tahiti will tell you when to deck yourselves with flowers and go down to the beach to meet them.
Great Vahine. Why do you laugh? Great Vahine, have we offended?
Who speaks?
It is I, Great Vahine. I, Parahaiti.
No, you have not offended, Parahaiti.
Then why do you laugh, Vahine Tahiti?
Oh, it is my humor to laugh, my daughter, at the shortcomings of those who serve me, even as all who hold power have some secret scorn for their servants.
Have we transgressed, then, O Vahine, in asking for this favor?
No, not transgressed, Parahaiti. Not transgressed.
What then, Vahine?
You are bold, Parahaiti. For those who are overbold, I have certain special favors. Take care, Parahaiti.
I serve the great Vahine Tahiti. You have promised you will not withhold.
I will not withhold. No, I will not withhold.
But you laugh.
I laughed, my daughter, as I looked across the oceans to see the men who come to you. I laughed as I heard them plotting against their leader and foretelling his death.
You promised us, Great Vahine.
And I will fulfill my promise. But remember, there is no gift without payment.
We will pay, Great Vahine.
Yes, you will pay. You will pay with exile and weeping. And you and the men who come to you in the great war canoe with white wings will die in a far unknown place. With your own hands shall you slay them.
Hey,
Haiti told me long years after the prophecy had come to pass. She told me how she fell on her knees and implored the goddess to spare them. She told how, after a long silence, the goddess laughed again at them and gave her word that one at least of the women would be spared to live forever. She would not tell that woman's name, so that they all glanced at each other secretly, hoping that each one, she herself, would be the one. The fate of certain white men was also set and sealed with the seal of Aini Taidi. And far away at the Cape of Good Hope, a little 90-foot vessel weighed anchor again and stood out to sea on a course set for the South Seas. Then on the 20th of August, 1788, a cold, early spring day, we dropped anchor in Adventure Bay in Van Diemen's Land. And we were a lean and tattered crew. The captain had driven us hard, had flogged us, starved us, and held us to our course through storm and calm under the whiplash of his voice for 9 long months. But I remember another night after we'd put out from Adventure Bay on the last leg of our voyage to Tahiti. Our McCoy and I stood again at the wheel with only the tiny lights in the binnacle flickering before us. Whispered together again.
He's no man, Smith, a beast. He deserves to die like a beast.
I'll take care, man.
I'll take care. But I tell you, Smith, when we get to Tahiti...
What do you do?
Oh, I'm going to jump ship, man.
He'll hang you.
If he catches me. And perhaps he won't catch me.
Perhaps
he'll be lying aft in his bunk with a craft knife in his throat.
Mac.
We'll say no more about it. But there's more than one aboard the ship that had furnished the craft knife. And not a few that had used it, too.
Shh. The mate.
Oh.
What's the course, men?
East Bernet, sir.
Keep us all for another half hour.
Aye, sir.
By night?
Aye, what is that, sir? Sir?
Well, McCoy?
This is Tahiti now, sir. You've been there?
Yes. It's a paradise, McCoy.
Are the women beautiful, sir?
Yes. Oh, the most beautiful in the whole world, Smith.
And do they have plenty to eat, sir?
Unlike us, they do, McCoy.
Aye, so. And there'd be hills and jungles, too, sir?
Oh, yes.
And where a man might never be found if the needy people was to, let's see, take a liking to him?
Well, they're very friendly people, McCoy. A man who jumped ship might be able to elude capture.
Oh, I didn't say anything about jumping ship, sir.
But it isn't a good idea to murder the captain of one of His Majesty's ships.
Sir?
I was just thinking aloud, McCoy.
Sir, McCoy didn't mean that. He was just thinking.
I don't know what you're talking about, Smith. Here, you men hungry.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
It isn't much, but...
Sir... You've never starved.
Haven't I? Well, just be careful, men.
Well, sir, it's 7 bells.
Strike it.
Aye, aye, sir.
And remember, you'd never see England again.
Scotland, sir. Kirk and Tillich, hard by Glasgow.
I'm from Cumberland myself. I wonder if ever I'll see Merlinteer again.
Then through the warm tropic seas again, night after in the starry night, with the Southern Cross over the port quarter, and day after blazing day on the northeasterly course for the Society Islands and the Isle of Tahiti. Short rations and a hint of scurvy amongst us, and the wicked hiss of the cat-o'-nine-tails of the gangway, the sobbing cries of the British seamen flogged, they're asking you to be fed like a man, not as a pig. And one day a cloud on the far horizon, and we knew our long voyage was nearly over. Tahiti at last, with the peak of Orohina towering high in the distance, a lush greenness wherever the eye passed. And we dropped anchor in Matabai Harbor, Tahiti Nui, after a voyage of more than 27,000 miles in almost 2 years. And as we've been told, it was a fair island. And the women were beautiful. Let me pass over the labors we performed at Tahiti, bringing aboard the breadfruit trees we set out for to fetch them to the West Indies. Let me pass over the indignities we suffered at the captain's hands and at the hands of his one loyal aide, the Clerk Samuel. the downright thievery of the two of them, taking from us the gifts of food we'd received from our friends on the island, the appropriation of the pearls and the carved woods they three-handedly gave us. And McCoy did jump ship and was caught. He got 36 lashes for it. And I had met Parahaiti. And at last the night came when I must say farewell.
But Smith, you are to stay.
Well, come back one day, Parahaiti. There's nothing to do now but go.
No.
If I stay, I'll be found as McCoy was found. He'll flog me, take me away anyway.
No.
I will come back, Parahaiti. I'll come back.
Do you love me, Smith?
I love you, Parahaiti. More than I thought I could love mortal woman.
Stay.
I dare not.
She promised you would stay.
Who promised?
Vaini Tahiti. What have you done to your children? Vaini Tahiti, you have lied to us and deceived us. You have denied us, Vaini Tahiti. Oh, great Vaini, we hold you to your promise. Give us our men. The men from the island.
Then there was a great clap of thunder. Then there was a clear sound of a distant voice speaking in a strange language. And again the voice of Parahaiti as she turned to me in the starlit darkness and spoke again.
Go. Go, my husband. And come back to me. Vaini Tahiti has promised.
And below me the shouts of the men calling to me to hurry lest I miss the last boat to the homeward bound ship. That now we'd set our course for England, the captain would be in a merrier mood. He was not. He kept the charts locked up. He alone could navigate us to England half a world away. We thought our life was a hell on the outward voyage. I say to you, that was a pleasant, lightsome, gay excursion compared to what we suffered when we headed away from Tahiti. I'll not describe it lest I turn your stomach. Then Vaini Tahiti laughed again from the heights of Orahina. And in the early morning twilight, she spoke to her daughters again.
Be at peace, my little ones. I have tested your faith, and you have believed. And now the fulfillment. For the men of the white-winged canoes arise now, and they turn their weapons against the one who would take them away from you.
And on the ship, I awoke to the sound of voices shouting, and I ran on deck. The captain stood beside the mainmast, and his hands were tied. He was at last a frightened man. And before him stood the master's mate, and behind him the men of the crew, armed and murderous. I heard the captain's voice again.
Mr. Christian, what is the meaning of this folly?
This is mutiny, Captain Bligh. I am in command of the Bounty.
I heard Captain Bligh plead for his life.
Mr. Christian, let us compose our difficulties. Do not murder me, Mr. Christian!
And I heard Fletcher Christian answer him sternly.
Captain Bligh, you've forfeited your life 1,000 times over.
And I saw at last the ship's launch hoisted over the side. I saw Captain Bligh board it with certain men who had neither the honor nor the hardihood to follow the leadership of Fletcher Christian. And what became of Captain Bligh and the others who departed with him, I know not. For we never saw him again.
Cannot remain here, men. For Bligh, if he does reach England, will set all his Majesty's Navy about our ears. If it takes until the end of time, they'll never give us up till we've all swung from a yard arm in a British
port. And so at long last, the promise of Vaini Tahiti was fulfilled. She had told us from our native lands to the Isle of Tahiti Nui. And now the women who had won us as their prizes set sail with us, never to see their own island again as long as they lived. 9 men from the Bounty, 6 men from Tahiti, for 9 women of Tahiti. And we sailed away to Pitcairn's Island. For a time we prospered, and the memory of the Vaini's price for her favor had almost faded. The 15 men, 9 women, a fatal number. Love, jealousy, hatred, murder. First the Tahitian women. First the Tahitian men, then one by one the Bounty's men. Fletcher Christian, the master's mate. Mills, the gunner's mate. Gentle William Dunn, the gardener, was never before sailed the seas. McCoy and Quintal and Williams and Martin, the able seamen. I alone was left of the Bounty's crew. And at last, Potter Haiti told me of the Vahini's prophecy. How we should all come to death at the hands of the ones in Tahiti. How all the women, too, should die, save one. And I listened in silence, for I was alone with only the few women, the few children on Pitcairn's Island.
And so the prophecy is nearly fulfilled, Smith, as I have told you. So that we know not who is the one of the women to live forever, as Vahini Tahiti promised.
And as she spoke and fell silent, I saw a change come over this woman, this Potter Haiti, my wife. I saw her transfigured, terrible, on the edge of the cliffs, high above the burned wreckage of the Bounty. I heard her speak again, and in a new voice.
Farewell, Englishmen. The bargain is set.
Now I take the body of Potter Haiti for my own, and she shall live forever and watch with my eyes over the sons and the daughters of those I brought to wed with my own.
Quiet, Please, on Tuned to Yesterday from July 5th, 1948 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. And that brings to a close this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for tuning in.